All right. Yeah, welcome from my side. As introduced, automatically identifying automation candidates, I will get back to my agenda. I first think it makes sense to introduce myself a little bit, at least my background. So my name is Henrik Leopold. My background is actually information systems, in German, Wirtschaftsinformatik. I somehow decided to actually not go straight to the university, but to do a company-linked study. So in Berlin, there is something that's called Berufsakademie. So it's basically you get a contract with a company, and then you study for 3 months. You have an internship for 3 months, and this continues for about 3 years. And I worked back then at Bayer. I liked this quite a lot, but then decided I want to see university and get real education. That's what I felt back then. I still worked at Bayer to earn some money, but I really liked what I found at Humboldt University. I met my PhD supervisor, whom you get to know next week, Jan Mendling, and I really liked the academic atmosphere, the passion, and I decided to pursue a PhD in this area of business process management. So the exact topic is natural language and business process models. I will talk a little bit about it today, so we get some feeling about what I've been doing or what I'm doing. I will also explain in a second. Then, my contract expired and I had to make a decision. I felt like I want to stay in academia, and my PhD advisor moved to Vienna, so I spent some time in Vienna, about 8 months, before I got an assistant professor position in Amsterdam at the Free University, where I spent 4 years. And now I'm back in Germany, now still as assistant professor, but with the option or with the prospect of having a permanent position very soon at the KLU, so that's the Kuhne Logistics University in Hamburg, a private business school, and the HBI. I think you met somebody from HBI already, Stefan, which is all the software engineering faculty of the University of Potsdam. So this position is basically connected to the two institutions. So basically at the business school, I'm the technical guy, and at HBI, I'm the business guy, something I can definitely live with. And yes, that's my background. What am I doing? This is a bit how I try to sell myself, of course, right? So I'm not a core AI person. However, the things I'm doing are somewhat on the intersection between artificial intelligence and business process management. Basically, it's three main topic areas I'm working on. The first is model-driven analysis of business processes. What does it mean? Well, as you know, or as you've learned already, business process modeling is a thing. Many organizations document their processes using process models, typically for the purpose of doing something with these models. In practice, they often struggle because, at some stage they have big repositories and then they need some tools to actually make use of the information they have captured. And to tackle this, I've developed several techniques to analyze processes, business processes that are captured either as models or as texts. The second topic I'm working on is process mining. So I think you haven't heard anything about process mining yet, have you? No. So process mining basically concerned with learning how processes are actually executed based on data that is generated by information systems, right? So if you use an SAP system, for instance, if you use any kind of other information systems, you leave traces when you work, when you do things. If you order something using SAP, it's going to be tracked. And this kind of information can be used to reconstruct what people have been doing and whether they have been doing the things in the right way. And that's a very prominent topic these days, where many people are working on. And I'm particularly interested, basically, in how to make this work if the typical assumptions that are there, so you have typical assumptions about the quality of the data you need, are actually not met. So this is something I'm very interested in. And last of all, requirements management is a bigger theme where I'm, among others, interested in how you can actually, if you have process models and texts and other kind of representations, how you can automatically transform those in one to another. Yeah, so because typically companies do not only have process models, but they also have texts, and then at some stage they struggle and they have inconsistencies, and these kind of things can be tackled using tools, and this is something I've been working on as well. So just to give you a very rough impression, right, so it's all concerned with business process management, but from a very technical perspective, so the things I'm typically doing is developing algorithms, techniques. Yep. And this now brings me to the question, or to what you're actually interested in, probably, what is this lecture about? Three big points I would like to talk about is, the first thing is actually about business processes and automation in general. It's a lecture after all, right? So I want to teach you a little bit what are the perspectives, what is automation, what kind of automation facets do we have? And the second, more relating to the actual title of my talk, of my lecture, automatic support for automating business processes. So once we have decided, okay, we want to automate something, how can we get there? Is there any way of automating the way to automate something? Sounds maybe a bit funny at this point, but you will see that actually automation is not as easy as it sounds, because you first have to figure out what you actually want to automate. And I will close with an outlook, which I think is also interesting, because obviously this is a field that is rapidly moving. As you know, everybody is doing AI these days, and every company has adopted AI, of course. Not every company, but all believe they have, but of course they're interested in it. They do see that there is a lot of potential, and they would like to exploit this even further, and there are some nice things to mention what I think is going to happen in the next couple of years. All right, so let's first talk about business processes and automation. And, well, let me start with some context and motivation. So what is this all about? And the core idea of automation in this particular context is obviously to relieve humans from things they don't like to do. And most humans don't like to do things that are repetitive, very simply repeatable, and routine-like, right? So there are many things. So think of if you're in charge of receiving applications from, so you all applied, right? So at some extent for a job or for this position here at the university, someone has to open this application. Sounds very trivial. Someone will double-click on this application, open it, check, is the information complete, what's your name, where you're from, is your degree sufficient, so all these kind of things. So if you have hundreds or thousands of applications, not the most exciting job ever, right? Because in the end, it might be actually kind of clear what kind of requirements there are. So doing this day after day might not be your first choice, right? So, and the idea of automation is now, well, there are these kind of tasks that are so repetitive and people don't like anyways, so why don't we take the robot out of the human and let robots or computers do this? Yeah. If you look, these are some numbers I found in McKinsey report. There are many numbers you can find on the topic, of course, and I think this is not too surprising. If you automate these kind of tasks, and let's assume for now that the computer does these tasks just as good as you do, well, then obviously you're faster, because typically computers are faster than you. And, well, that means the process flow time will be reduced. And obviously you have efficiency gains, because, well, you don't have to do it anymore. So you can actually spend your time on other things. So that's a core idea of automation. And what I would like to talk about, just as an introduction, are two facets. I'm not claiming these are the only two facets of automation. There are more. We can also talk about physical robots. I will clarify in a second. I'm actually not talking about physical robots. I will not talk about car manufacturing, these kind of things exist as well. Today, I will talk about two facets relating to process automation. And these are the workflow-oriented perspective. So basically, the idea is, okay, we have a process in place, and we also have a model that somehow describes this process. And now we want to automate this workflow. We somehow want to make this process flow better. We want to coordinate the work using a tool. How can we get there? That's the first part. Then I will talk about robotic process automation, where the idea is then really taking a specific task, like opening an email and copy and pasting information, how we can automate this. Right? So these are the two facets. So if you want, this is the big picture, and this is then going down and focusing on specific tasks. But let me just get started. And let me also emphasize, I'm very good at talking fast. So if you have questions, don't be shy, okay? All right, so let's get started with the workflow-oriented process automation perspective again. So I got it confirmed yesterday, you know about business processes and about business process models. So typically, if you have these models in an organization, they have been created by domain experts. What does it mean? Well, they have been created by the people who are actually involved with the process, right? So if you're talking about a process in the finance department, well, then there's a finance person who has been involved in creating this process model. Also makes sense because you need this input. What's the purpose of such a model? Well, typically, I think that's something you've talked about as well, is communication, right? So you create a process model to, first of all, understand what's happening, maybe to gain some insights into how you can do it better. Maybe you need this as some sort of explanation for someone else. When I worked for Bayer, I've been creating process models for teaching or for training new employees. And obviously, if you have such a model, it needs to be understandable. That's the purpose. It's there for communication. If people look at the model and they can't understand it, the model is useless. So such a model typically contains only relevant information. It's rather easy to understand and serves the purpose of communication. Now, if we want to support such a process using IT, if we want to execute, if we want to use a workflow software to support such a process, we need a different kind of model. Because such a model should probably be created by IT experts. Why? Well, because only IT experts know what aspects of execution are relevant. So what you see is what we need to do is we need to go from the left to the right side, where we need to end up with a model that is no longer just understandable, but rather precise and unambiguous, and contains information that is relevant for execution. Question is, of course, now how to bridge the gap. And I took this general description as something you can also find in literature, of course. These are five steps you can take, and I would like to illustrate those, and I think it provides a very good context for talking about robotic process automation in the next couple minutes. So what's the idea? We want to go from the conceptual model to the executable model, and the idea is that we say, okay, let's start with understanding what is actually automated already, right? So when we talk about robotic process automation, you might get the feeling, now we finally start to think about automation. Well, many things are automated, of course, right? So there are automated responses. Well, you've sent emails and got immediate responses, right? So obviously this is something automated. Many other things are automated as well. There's rule checking, maybe it's automatically checked when you order something on Amazon. No human is going to the warehouse and is checking whether the headphones you like so much are actually there. It's, of course, directly taken from a database, and the database is updated. So what I'm saying is there is a lot of automation already in place. So before we can understand how we can improve the current situation, we have to understand the current situation. Of course, we will realize that some of the tasks in our process are manual, completely manual, right? So there's no interaction with any IT system. So we're going to review these tasks, and then we step by step adjust the process model. And I will use an example to go through this. So first, identify automation boundaries. Intuition, not everything can be automated, right? So some things require, at this point, good for us, human intervention or human intelligence, and that's fine. Now we can discuss about the boundaries, but it's very clear, at least from the technology that is there, that we, for certain tasks, we need and want a human. So the strategy for now is to look at our process and understand, okay, what kind of task type do we have? And basically there are three. First, there are automatic tasks, so things that are already fully automated. Yeah, there is automatic transfer. There is an automatic check whether a product is available. There is an automatic response. There is an automatic solvency check, you name it, right? So there are many examples. Okay, this is one. Then there are so-called user tasks. User tasks are tasks where you interact, where you do something as a human, but you interact with IT. So most of the tasks you're doing when you work are actually user tasks, right? Because you use your computer, for instance, to order something, right? So if you work in the finance department and, well, here at university, right? So you want to know, okay, is there still budget? Well, you call someone, person will check using a computer. Is there still money there? Yes. Okay. This task was done or accomplished by interacting with a piece of software with a computer. This is what we call user task. And then there are manual tasks that actually happen without any interaction with IT systems, right? So maybe there is some, think of a consultation with your manager. Maybe there is no IT involved, no protocol, nothing. Completely manual. Maybe somebody is actually manually fetching material from the warehouse. No IT involved, just going to the warehouse, grabbing something, taking it somewhere. Or maybe shipping could be manual as well, right? So somebody's in charge of shipping something, just packaging things, going to the post office, sending. This could be manual, depending on how it's implemented. Right, so these are the three tasks, and the idea is now let's look at our process and understand for each task, what's its type? Is it automatic? Is it a user task, or is it manual? And I've brought an example, which I think is probably even readable. It's a very small process. I will read it to you. So what's happening is basically that we receive an order, and then we check the availability in the warehouse. There's a warehouse database in place. We can check against the order whether the whatever is ordered is actually available. And then we have two outcomes. Either it's available, it's not available. This is swapped, sorry. So if it's not available, we order the product from the wholesaler, and if it's available, we obtain it from the warehouse. Then we can approve the order, send the invoice, and ship the order. What we're going to do now is look at each task and basically analyze whether this is automatic, user, or manual. So I ask you, check availability in warehouse. What do you think? Automatic, user, manual? Again? Automatic? Yeah. It depends a bit on your assumption here, right? So you don't have full information. I actually decided it's going to be automatic, depending on, you could also argue now, okay, there's a person checking with a computer whether the product is in the warehouse, then it would be a user task. If just a piece of software is automatically going to check whether this product is available. Basically, what happens on Amazon before you can click the buy button, that is automatic. All right, order product from wholesaler. So if we figure out, okay, it's not there, we want to order it. Automatic, user. What would you say?
It depends on
your assumption. So if there is some sort of useful IT integration, right? So the automatic service figured out it's not there, okay, then we have some sort of API with our wholesaler, then we can just consider this an automatic task. If not, well, maybe a person has to interact and manually order this, but then it would be user task because there is an IT system involved. All right. Obtain product from warehouse. Manual, user, automatic.
Manual.
Yeah, again, it's manual here. I will declare it manual, but it depends. If somebody is actually walking down with any IT device to the warehouse and fetching this product from the shelf, it's manual. If there is, I'm not spoiling my own story, but it could also be automatic, right? So it, I know at Amazon it's actually, it would be a user task. I will tell you in a second why, but you could also think of, a fully automated warehouse where actually a robot is fetching the product from the shelves. I think Amazon has this as well. I have seen pictures from the German Amazon warehouse. There it's a user task. You will see in a second why. Then we can approve the order, which we do with the system. We send an invoice, in this case done automatically, and then we ship the order manual again. So what do we learn from this? Again, this really depends. You cannot, I think it's also important to point this out. Now I'm just giving you some colors here. You cannot just derive this from looking at the model, right? So you need some domain knowledge. So, so we, in this case, need some assumptions. So let's just accept that this is the situation we have. We have a couple of automatic tasks, and we have one user task, and we have two manual tasks. And now, what we do not like so much are the manual tasks, so we're going to look at them. And now we want to review this manual task, and why? Well, our problem is, if we have a system in place that supports our process execution, a BPM, some sort of BPM system, if something is happening without any IT, so it's completely manual, the system cannot see that this is happening. Well, your data privacy feeling might tell you, oh, that's nice. It's actually a bad thing from an organization perspective, because we do not know when it happens, we do not know if it happens, and, well, also not who has done this. So if it's manual, the BPMS cannot see a task, so it does not exist. So the idea is, okay, if we have these manual tasks, well, why not put some sort of IT in place so that it's at least reconnected? So maybe a person needs to walk to the warehouse, but maybe we can integrate this with some IT device so we at least can make this task visible again, right? So that's, if we have this situation, gentleman walking down the shelves, fetching the product, we could do it like this. This is how it happens at Amazon, by the way. So they have a chaotic organization, right? So that things are not somehow organized. It's just almost random how things are organized. So you have just items somewhere, and they have a screen. And if they know the headphones you just ordered, they will see where they can find them. They'll walk there, grab the headphones, scan them. And at this moment, the system knows, okay, someone has fetched headphones, so that means we can update our stock in the warehouse. And we also know that a person, well, this individual holding this device, had just completed a task. And this is exactly what we need, right? So the system wants to know that a task happened, and although this is still manual, if you want, you interact with an IT system, so it's now a user task, so the system knows. So that's step number two. Now we have turned all our, well, that's the idea, we turn all our manual tasks into user tasks, and now we have to complete the process model. Why? Well, remember, we were moving from a conceptual model to an executable model, and there are some things are missing. So let me ask, what have you, when you model a process, what have you discussed how much you would capture? So would you capture 50% of the cases, maybe 80% or 90% or everything? Would you capture all exceptions in the process model? What's your feeling when you model a process? So the answer is, as always, it depends. But so most textbooks would somehow argue, so the key term is somehow happy path modeling, or they would call it, like, you model 80% of the cases. So what's the idea? If you have a model that serves the purpose of communication and you include every exception, this model will no longer serve the purpose of communication because it's just too complex. And many things, many exceptions are simply known. If you think of a payment process, obviously it can happen that your payment gets rejected, right? Because the credit card, I don't know, has expired, the security code is wrong, whatever. And so there are many kind of situations why the process might stop right there. And for people that are domain experts and deal with these kind of processes a lot, they say, yeah, well, that's clear. Well, if the payment doesn't go through, well, we cannot ship the product. It's as easy as that. Yeah, so if you go on Amazon and you try to pay and it doesn't work, you will just get stuck there. So either you successfully pay, or you will not get to the end. And maybe you would not even model that. And the idea is here, okay, if you want to automate a process, well, then you need to include these exceptions, because otherwise the system cannot do anything about it. Yeah, so we have to add these kind of exception handlers. So to get back to our example, for instance, what if we try to, if we figure, okay, the product is not available, and we order the product at our trusted wholesaler, and now the wholesaler doesn't have it available either. Well, what do we do then? Well, in this case, we just inform the customer and then terminate the process. might not be the most elegant way, but well, at least we've covered what we're going to do. So for this, so the story here is very short. In the end, what we need to do is just to make sure that exceptions that might not be so relevant in communicating the main flow of the process, we need to include if we want to execute this process in a workflow system. Next step, adjust task granularity. Why? The idea is that such a workflow system is particularly available when it coordinate work. So has anybody of you ever used like a workflow system where you get a task where basically a system tells you, hey, this is your task, you have to complete this now, or this is your task list, and then you go to the list. Yeah, you are nodding. Yeah. So how was that? Convenient?
Depends
on the kind of system you've been facing. But obviously, what of course you don't realize because you have your own perspective, you just look at a list of tasks, what the system does, it coordinates work. There's a lot of work to be done, and the system figures out, hey, it's you, you have to do this. You might be not happy about it, but well, that's something important, right? So the system coordinates the work. It says, you do this, you do this, you do that. Great. So that's one of the big key, that's some of the key value it can deliver. So the idea is, well, if there are tasks executed by the same person, well, then for the execution, we don't care so much, right? So if there are two tasks and the same person or the same role, we execute the task, well, we can just merge them because the system doesn't have to do anyway. It doesn't have to do anything anyway, right? So because it can assign you two tasks, but, well, we can also just assign one big task. However, there are many tasks that have hidden subtasks, you could say. So if I get back to my example, maybe ship order is not only shipping order, but it also actually requires someone to pack the product. And maybe that's a different person. And if that's a different person, well, then we should rather split so the system can coordinate the work respectively. Right? So that's the idea. Okay, almost done. So that's our process model. What have we done? Well, we have done three things. Well, four things, but three effectively. So we have analyzed the task type. Based on that, we have hopefully changed all the manual tasks into user tasks. We have added some exceptions here to cover exceptional rare cases, and we have adjusted the granularity. And now we could say, okay, this model is now ready for execution. Of course it's not. There are many other things we might need to specify. I think that's easy to remember, that's easy to imagine. Right, so maybe there are certain variables you have to set. Maybe there are messages you have to define, right? So what's the kind of message the customer will automatically receive when the product is not available? Hopefully a nice one. Maybe there are other signals or error messages we have to define, right? So these are all things we have to configure somewhere. Maybe there are service details we have to specify. Maybe the code fragments. So if you actually have something fully automated and you want to integrate it into the system, well, then the system needs to know what to do. So maybe there's a code fragment. Maybe you need to assign roles. So which role is in charge of what activity? And we have to specify an interface. Depending on the tool you use, I have brought you one example, just one screenshot from Camunda. So Camunda is one of the many BPM, execution system, so that somehow provides you with or supports this entire process of automating your business process, which you do not actually see so well. So this is the model here. What you see down here is the list of activities that actually have been executed. So you can really track, okay, for this process instance, where are we in this process? Which activities have been executed? By whom? When? So you can really keep track of the process. And that's maybe something that is trivial, but of course very important if you want to be on top of your processes. Yeah, so the system then would organize and coordinate the work. However, what you see also, or what you realize, of course, this is not about automation in the sense of that the work you've been doing manually is now replaced by a computer. So this is what I would like to talk about next, but I would like to emphasize that this is something that is an important perspective for many organizations to let their processes or the coordination of these processes be supported by such systems. All right, so that's this perspective. Let's talk about this perspective. So what's robotic process automation? Have you ever heard of this before? Ever, ever? Nope. Okay, then I tell you. So that's the textbook definition. So it says robotic process automation is a technology that allows the automation of a task in exactly the way how a human would perform the task. So something that, or maybe some technology that is related to that, if you have ever heard of screen scraping or these kind of things, where you program, basically you program a piece of software to click somewhere for you. So I have done this also once because I, actually for research, actually for this research, there was a tool and I needed, and it contained all German verbs and all their conjugation forms, but in order to see them you had to manually select each verb from a list. Oh, I'm talking about 5,000 verbs. So I contacted the company and asked them, okay, do you provide a file for this? Because, well, I can see the information, I can save one verb at a time, but I want to have these 5,000 verbs in just one file. Can you send this to me? Yeah, for €1,000. It took me 5 minutes to figure out how to configure a tool that would automatically click, save one file as verb1.txt, and then, well, do this repeatedly for 5,000 files, and then, so I did not pay the €1,000. It's bad that this is recorded, right? Oh, but I'm not naming the company. Anyway, so, well, this is the exact same idea, right? So you have a very repetitive task, that is, you select an item from a list, have to save it, and do it again. And you can easily program a bot to do that. And RPA tools, I will talk about them as well, are basically providing you with an environment where you can configure this very easily, right? So the idea, just to emphasize this again, a robot in this context is not a robot, it's a piece of software, right? It's a piece of software that is doing something for you, so it's a computer program that imitates human actions. Again, the idea is that RPA is typically used to automate labor-intensive, repetitive, these kind of cumbersome tasks, such as data entry, data validation, these kind of back-office processes. I will give you an example, or this is an example, and you tell me where the human is needed. So, again, small BPMN process. So, first task, open the email. Then we have to open an Excel attachment, hopefully attached to this email. And then we have to transfer the application details into an ERP system. Then we check whether the information is actually complete. If yes, the process is finished. If not, well, we contact the applicant and ask for missing information. So now the question for you is, what do you think? How much human do we need? And where?
I think it depends if it's possible to say if the information is complete. As long as you see it, for example, if there is some kind of form where you enter your address, I think we could easily check this automatically. And in this case, this basic test could be completely performed by the job.
Yeah, I perfectly agree, right? So that's exactly it. So opening an email can be done by a piece of software. Opening an attachment and checking whether such an attachment exists can be done by a piece of software. Transferring the application details into an ERP system can be done by a piece of software if we can trust that the information can be found in a certain place and that we can then automatically validate whether the information is complete. For instance, because we have a form provided where we have particular fields where we look for, and then configure, okay, or conclude, okay, everything is there or not. And then, well, automatically contacting the customer would then be possible if we can do this check automatically. Right, so in this process, depends a bit on the circumstance, but it could potentially be completely done by a piece of software. Why would we do that? Before I get to the tools, there are certain advantages, obviously. It reduces the human effort and also human errors. So I think what is very important to figure out is that when we have these kind of tools, they're not always perfect, but sometimes we tend to forget that humans are not perfect either, right? So human makes errors, especially when it comes to transferring figures or grades, So always check your grades. So that's whenever there is a no personal stories here. No, but of course, whenever there is a media disruption and a person needs to copy and paste the value or automatic or manually transfer, you know, if the human is 99.99% accurate, well, every thousandth person still has something incorrect, right? So, what else? Obviously, we can improve productivity because we save costs and time. The good thing is, I will show you this in a second, is does not, 99% does not require programming skills. So these tools we're talking about, these RPA tools people are so fond of these days, do not require programming. So it's really a click and configuring. It's easy to automate a large number of processes, but there are also a couple of disadvantages I would like to mention briefly. If you imagine that you have configured a program that basically, think of Excel, right? So you have an Excel mask and you expect there is a value in cell B2. Well, that's easy to configure, but if this for some reason changes, you have to change this RPA bot because, well, how can it know? So this is not particularly intelligent. It just does whatever you told this bot to do. So if something changes, you have to change the software. The speed depends on the speed of the application. So have you ever, I hope you have not, but if you have you ever worked with VBA and Excel and tried to automate things with a Visual Basic for applications? So, yeah. So that comes as a programming language with Excel. And if you've ever tried to automate something, you will realize that this is not as fast as you would think because it will open windows and do all kinds of things. So, it's not super fast. It's certainly much faster than human, but the story is still, with the takeaway is still, of course, it depends on the speed of the software. And if you, for instance, think of transferring a value that first has to be computed, and it takes 5 minutes to compute the value, yeah, think of a solvency check, a bank, right? So you apply for a loan, and then the tool needs to compute a couple of things. Well, and if it takes 5 minutes to compute this, well, then it still takes 5 minutes because the tool can only copy the value once it's there. Often, this is what you can find very often in the reports of all these consultancies, people have very unrealistic expectations. So they do think it's going to be magic. To some extent, it can really reduce the time and effort, but it's not magic. So people have sometimes very unrealistic expectations. And last of all, most importantly, maybe even the process selection is not so trivial, right? So if you think of a company, a big company, Volkswagen producing cars. So what should they do, right? So they've heard of RPA, they have the money, they think like, yeah, it would be a cool idea. Why not use this kind of technology? And the question is obviously, okay, where exactly, right? So do we now use RPA to support our finance department, or do we now use RPA to process the invoices from our customers, or do we automatically handle service requests from customers, or do we use it in the context of production, if it's applicable? So selecting the right process is not as trivial as it sounds, because you somehow have to make a decision, where can it actually create value? And I did not come up with this myself. You can find many charts like this that somewhat try to give you some guidance. I'm not saying that these numbers are now perfectly accurate or representative, but I think the criteria are exactly what you should consider. So if you have to make the decision whether you want to actually support a process using RPA or not, there are a couple of things we can look at. First thing, adherence to rule-based logics, right? So if the process uses defined procedures and standardized set of rules, it's easier to automate. If the process is completely loose and there is a lot of human knowledge required, right? So if you think of a service center, where the service center is sending all kinds of complex requests, well, there is not much you can do. However, service center, there's a nice anecdote. So I lived in Amsterdam for 4 years. So the not Dutch Royal Airlines, KLM, they claim that they actually have automated 80% of their service requests. So they get a lot of, so they try to actually get rid of phone calls. So they offer you, if you ever fly KLM, they offer you to contact them via WhatsApp, Snapchat, Facebook Messenger, whatever you like, as long as it's text. Why? Well, they figured that using some more advanced robots, using some natural language processing, they can immediately answer 80% of these requests automatically. Because people have very basic questions. People have questions such as, can I bring my cat on the flight? How many pieces of luggage can I bring? Will my flight depart in time? Can I change my seat? These kind of things. And well, and they have developed a system that can recognize these basic questions and gives an automatic answer. And then 80% of the people, they claim, do never get back to them. So either they're totally annoyed or satisfied, one of them. So, but the story here is, of course, if you have a process that has a lot of deviations and a lot of exceptions, probably you better not do it. Yeah, so low exception rate, the process sticks to defined number of rules. Use of structured and readable electronic input. So if their input is provided in Excel, as XML, or as a readable PDF, that's a plus, right? So if you have to start to, if you have ever worked with non-readable PDFs, and you then have to start to text recognition, it does work, but it does not work as good as reading a value from cell A1. Yeah, so that's a plus. And here, at least, it's considered to be really a major factor. Mature and stable process, right? So the process needs to be well documented. No major changes are foreseen in the future. If the process changes, you might change the robot as well. Low number of applications involved. So if there are connections to a lot of other tools, might be a risk factor because you soon might need to change the tool again. Yeah, so these are just some, I think, some of the important things to consider when you have a potential candidate and you look at it, okay, do I want to automate this using or support this using RPA? Well, the second thing is obviously, besides this, how important is the process for a business? And there, this is determined by a couple of factors. How often do we execute the process? How many FTEs could we save by automating this task, right? So maybe there's a task that people don't like, but actually it takes up 5 minutes of their time a day. Well, then it's not worth it. If it takes up an hour or 2 hours a day, and it's highly frequent, and we get to the idea, okay, we can save 3, 2, 4, 5, 6 FTEs by automating this, well, great. Yeah. And then I think this is also a nice or important point, fit to the strategy, right? So here they relate to an example where the service delivery has the highest priority for the management. So any RPA initiative that would help to reduce delivery time would be preferred because that's the important thing. And if you look at a company like Amazon, well, the kind of service and the kind of interaction, that's highly important to them because that's what they do pretty well. So probably they would focus on that. And then, well, it's pretty easy to put these in a matrix like this. And of course, if the automation fit is high and the value is high, well, these are the candidates you would consider first. And only if the automation fit is still reasonably high and the value is a bit lower, well, then you would focus on it a little bit later. Yeah, so that's just to give you some main guidance, but it's, I think it's very hard to give very concrete concrete measures here. So if you look at tools, there are many. So I stole this from another research group. They created this very nice figure. One of the biggest players I personally know is UiPath. Also because they've recently acquired a process mining company. So it's also very interesting because obviously these two domains go together very well. And you see here a bit, of course, there are different tools that range from classic ERP to the core APR capabilities, and then some tools support some functionalities. But one of the core RPA tools are something like is UiPath, Kryon, these kind of tools. So how do they look like? To give you some idea, I bet you cannot you do so well. I try to explain what you see here. So what you do is you try to model step by step what this tool is going to do. And what you see here is a window where the person has basically selected that its tool is supposed to read an Excel file. So something very basic. And then this box here says read range. Yeah, and then we basically say, okay, which box, from which range do we read our values? And then there is an error. So next step is then, okay, for each row we do something. Okay, what do we do for each row in D1? Well, there is some, we get a row item, and then we can do something. So it's a bit, it sounds like programming, but you actually click it together. So if you have encountered these Nassi Schneidermann diagrams, so Struktogramme in German, somehow something like this that you built here, step by step, which this tool is going to do. The nice thing is that if you look at UiPath and many other tools, they of course have a standard set of capabilities. So they do know that you would like to read a value from an Excel. So you can basically select this from a list of potential activities. And they can also, and this is a very long list obviously, so you can step by step click this robot together. And that's the idea, that you actually do not need to program. And this explains to a large extent also why these tools are so successful, because you can technically give it to a domain expert who's doing this every day. So, okay, here, what do you do? Explain to the tool. And it also provides you, so here's this recording button with the possibility to do what you can actually do in Excel. I've asked about VBA. So in Excel, you can also do that. So in Excel, you can record something. Yeah, so if you have time, try it. It's not too bad. It's very similar. So you basically perform a procedure. Maybe you copy a cell, paste it in a table or something. This is something you can record in Excel, and you can execute this over and over and over again. So this is something you could do here as well, right? So you could just say, okay, perform the task you're doing, and this is going to provide you with a template which you can then adjust a little bit, so you can see whether the tool does what you want. And then, well, you've automated your repeatable and routine-like task. So that's at least the idea. All right. Do you have questions about this? So just to quick mental recap, right? So automation, two perspectives, maybe two levels. On the workflow level, we're interested in making sure that a business process, that the work is coordinated, and that we have tool support for the coordination. That's the workflow perspective. And here we are looking then at specific tasks. Maybe we have identified in the context of the first iteration of the workflow perspective certain tasks. We say, okay, this is something we no longer want to do manually. And then we can automate those completely by using a tool like this. All right, so the problem is still, I've given you some guidelines, what processes to consider, right? So the stable processes with certain type of input. But the question is still, is there any other kind of support we can get to select the processes or the tasks we may want to automate? And this is what I want to talk about here. It's partially at least related to my own research, and I want to give you some insights what you can do. And we have worked together with quite some companies, so this is not something we have created. We have created this in our lab, but it's actually something that has been used. All right, so have you ever seen this? Your professor is nodding, so you have. Just to put this in the context, so this is the BPM lifecycle. When we talk about business process management, well, there are these different stages where you basically start at identifying, okay, what are the processes you're trying to improve, and then you, well, first derive an as-is model, so you try to understand how's the process going, then you can analyze the model or the process, then you can maybe improve it, redesign it, implement it, and then see whether these changes you have been implementing are actually bringing the improvements you've expected. Yeah, you can measure some KPIs, and then, well, am I out of power? Really? That's quite embarrassing. All right. I did not consider that. I would just keep on talking. Right after I thought, oh yeah, geez. No, I'm back. I'm all connected to the power anyways. Good. So this is just to put this in context. So as you've been probably discussing as well already, many organizations do business process management, and part of doing business process management is, of course, documenting your processes. So to make a long story short, is there are process models, and these process models are there. My idea, or our idea a couple of years ago already, was, okay, if there are so many process models, can't we use these process models for getting certain insights and maybe even identifying candidates for automation? And just to give you some more information on this, why I think this is a good idea, many organizations have really large collections of process models. So I've worked with Volkswagen, for instance. They have a repository with over 1,000 models. We can now discuss whether this is particularly useful or productive, or whether it's even possible to maintain such a repository. They have it, right? So Volkswagen and Wolfsburg have such a collection of, they had event-driven process chains. We worked with Vodafone in the Netherlands, over 2,000 models. BPMN, 2,000 models. Average model size, you can think of like 20, 30 activities. So it's a lot. Also worked with Bank Austria, having over 1,000 models, and a couple of hundred textual descriptions. So this I found particularly interesting, that they did not only document the processes and models, but then for specific activities, they would have, I'm not lying, a document with 50 pages describing the details. So they had massive process documentation. Maybe also because of the particular sector, right? Banking, there are a lot of very sensitive aspects that need to be documented, right? So there were textual documents, of course, explaining how certain interactions with an ATM work and how to fill them with money and these kind of things. But my point is, this information is available in these models. They're sometimes much bigger than this. People have been investing the effort. The models are there. And even though they might not be perfectly up to date, the idea was, okay, why can't we use this? And the point, obviously, is that automated analysis for these repositories is the only viable choice anyway. Right? So nobody can just go through these models and decide, hey, I have this 5 criteria for selecting my RPA candidates. Let's go through these 1,000 models and let's do this for all of them, and then we just have an easy decision. It's obviously not that easy. So the idea was, okay, why not use this? Why not use these process models and automatically analyze them? And when I started my PhD, I then looked at process models, and most people back then have been interested in the structure. And then I looked into these boxes and tried to automatically analyze these boxes and realized, okay, it's not as easy as I thought, because you have these very short text fragments and they follow different patterns. So I don't know how much you know about linguistics. You don't have to know much. But you for sure know what a verb is. And what you see here is that here we have an imperative verb followed by some object. So you make a decision. It's imperative, right? You make something. And here there is no verb at all. It's just a noun. But obviously, this execution is something that you have to do. Here, it's also a noun, a gerund, the ing. So it's also a noun, but it means something active. And here, again, somehow, you have, again, it's a noun with this off construct, but again means you have to synchronize something. So there are quite a lot of these patterns. So if you take the same example of creating invoice, yeah, so the imperative version with the verb phrase is create invoice. The noun phrase version is invoice creation, creation of invoice, creating invoice. Well, and then there are, of course, some very irregular labels. So what I wanted to do is I thought, okay, if we can analyze these text boxes, well, then we can get these kind of insights from these model collections. But it turned out to be very tricky. I'll give you an example why. So this is something I took from a from the very famous SAP reference model. So what you see here is that you have a label that's called plan data transfer to ECPCA, some system. And here it says plan integration of profit centers, and then there's some manual profit center planning. And if I now ask you, what's the action? So what's the active part here, right? So what are you instructed to do? Then if you look at this, you hopefully agree with me that you have to plan the integration of a profit center. The question is now, what are you instructed to do here? What's your feeling? So the question is, do you plan a data transfer or do you transfer plan data? I don't know. Well, we could figure it out probably by looking at the context, by understanding the process in detail. But I can tell it's quite hard for a computer to figure this out. Why? Well, because for a computer, both plan and transfer are nouns and verbs. So if you dislike the English language, it's actually quite easy. That's most people like the English language. For automatic analysis, this is quite annoying. I don't know how all of you how well you speak German. German is much more complicated because there are many more forms, but it's very beautiful for analysis because it's rather unambiguous. So what's the problem here? It's a phenomenon that's called zero derivation ambiguity. So plan is both a verb and a noun. To plan and the plan. Transfer is both a verb and a noun. To transfer, the transfer. There are many words in the English language where this is the case. You will have a hard time finding such words in German. They do exist, but it's very few. So this is why if you have such a short fragment, it's very hard to analyze those. And while there are super sophisticated NLP tools out there, we realized, well, it's quite some years ago, so 2012, wrote the first paper about this, it's very hard to deal with this. Eventually, we found a way. Well, this is the most recent attempt, actually not working actively on this anymore, but took a long time to publish this. But you can recognize this using basically some machine learning, but it's quite tricky. But well, this is something we have figured out so that we can automatically recognize whether this is actually planning a data transfer or a planned data transfer. Once you have this, you can do quite a couple of cool things. So for instance, to start with something very easy, if you think of a large process model collection consisting of hundreds, thousands of activities, well, the first idea is, well, if you want to find relevant things that are happening, why not count the activities in the first place? Something very trivial, right? So just counting, okay, how many times is the signature being checked? And if we figure, okay, it's 700 times, then it seems to be a central task. Well, now then we can look at the task and see, okay, is this something that makes sense to automate, yes or no? But we really very easily get a priority list. Well, this is, of course, very basic. What we can also do is then, okay, let's try to understand nice animation. Let's try to understand based on these business objects. Yeah, so the signature is the business object here. The contract is the business object here, and the invoice here. So pay and check, approve and sign, check record and check signature. We can group those together and try to identify that what kind of business objects are particularly important in the context of our processes. And maybe this gives us a very good starting point to understand where we could look at when we want to automate things. I will give you an example in a second. And we could also go a step further. So what you see here is that we're not only consolidating on the business object, but also on a business object that are derived, right? So there's a contract, but maybe there's a service contract or a customer service contract or some other kind of contract. So many different types. So based on these linguistic patterns, you can cluster activities and in this way find some starting points for automation. What's also important to do in this context before we look at an example is, of course, to realize that language, human natural language, contains a lot of synonyms, and that makes sense to resolve them. So a couple of examples here. So these are real examples taken from the same collection, right? Update stock, update inventory. Obviously have a common action, that is update. Business object one is stock. Business object two is inventory. You can argue that these two are different things. Probably they're not. Bill and invoice. Definitely referring to the same concept. Answer and response, probably referring to the very same concept. Declaration and announcement, quantity and amount. So this is all taken from the same process model collection, and it's possible to detect these things automatically. How? Well, there are quite some powerful tools available. If you're interested, there's a tool called WordNet, which is a good start for these kind of relations. It's from it's developed by the Princeton University, and the idea is to group words into so-called sets of synonyms, right? So certain words can have different meanings, and you just take a word, a group of words with the same meaning and put them in the same group. So that means that the same word can be in different sets. So for instance, bank can obviously be something you can sit on or something where you can get money from. And so this word would be in two sets, one that refers to the meaning of a bank and one that would refer to the meaning of the institution. Yeah. So so there are tools you can use to figure this out. And just to give you some feeling why this can be useful, how this can be useful. So we ran this. We ran this on other collections as well. But unfortunately, because of some NDAs, I cannot show you the details. But this is a public collection, so I can share those. So what have we figured? So the most frequent business objects in this collection are order, timesheet, invoice, budget, and posting. And if you now look at the actions, you see what kind of actions are executed on these business objects. Execute, settle, archive, release, print. If you look at the invoice, it's release, verify, process, receive, reverse. So we get a good feeling of what are the most frequent activities, and then just by having this, you have, well, it's rather easy to assess whether it makes sense to automate something, because you would know from your domain knowledge, but you would get immediate feedback how many times, well, you get a good frequency perspective, right? So how relevant is this in our process collection? And what you could also get from including some behavioral analysis, right? So if we, let's take the business object order, and all these actions, we can derive such a life cycle from the collection, and in this way really have a starting point for maybe a robot, for a bot, right? So what's happening to the order? Well, it's created, then it's processed, and then all these activities are being executed sequentially. So all this can then serve as a starting point. What I want to add is that we have worked on this a couple years ago, back then not with the idea of RPA in mind, not at all. It was mainly about identifying activities that can potentially be automated and basically give you something at the hand. So it's not fully automated, but it gives you a priority list, right? So it gives you here, this is the analysis, look at it. And I think if you look at this, well, you can rather quickly get to a decision whether something is can be automated or not. All right. So again, if you don't interrupt me, I will continue talking. It's not a threat. It's just a statement. All right. So that was one thing. The second thing I want to mention is there are not only process models, but I also emphasize, okay, there are process descriptions. They're there as well. Again, they exist. Why not use them? I will give you an example, a very simplified example. So something like this. So it says, the vacations request process starts when an employee submits a vacation request via the ERP system. The request is then received by the immediate supervisor of the employee requesting the vacation. The supervisor decides about the request. If the request is rejected, the application is returned to the employee. If the request is approved, a notification is generated to the HR representative, who then completes the respective management procedures. Simplified, real text. Don't ask me why it exists in this way, but it does. It's there. The question is, can we do anything with this? Big challenge whenever we deal with natural language is ambiguous. Meaning is that you can interpret this in different ways, right? So, well, you learn this quite often, right? So you have misunderstandings. You said something was But when you analyze written text, you have the same phenomenon, so there are different ways of how to interpret both the structure and the semantics. The idea here is that we wanted to go a step further. So you hopefully remember the three task types, user, automatic, and manual. And here the idea was, okay, if we have more information than in the model, because we have this text, can't we figure out these tasks automatically? So, for instance, if you look at the text, so one task here is obviously to submit a vacation request. Who is doing this? Well, the employee. What kind of task is it? What type of task is it? Well, it's a user task. Why? Well, obviously, the employee uses an ERP system to do that, so it's a user task. What else is happening? Receive request, something that's, the role is a supervisor, so the supervisor receives the request, and it's also a user task. Well, that's something we can't conclude, because if it was submitted via an ERP system, it's probably also received using such a system. What else do we have? We have the supervisor decides about the request, right? So decide request by the supervisor, probably manual. So at least there is no IT system we can find here how this is done. And we have many others. Return application is done by the ERP system, so it's automatic. We have generate notification, probably also done by the ERP system, automatic. And then complete management procedures, a manual task done by the HR representative. So this is the information that is just provided by this short piece of text. And then the idea was, okay, if we have such a text, and can't we recognize all of this, so all the information I put in these boxes automatically? Using the NAP tools we have at hand and our experience, it was very easy to do the first three, right? So to get the verb, the object, and the role, it's quite trivial. I will show you how anyways. But then how can we get to this type? How can we recognize whether something is manual? And what we thought is, yeah, maybe we can actually use the type of the verb. Maybe there's other information we can use. And this is what how we started this project. And this is a bit of the solution or the idea we developed. We take the text, and then we do some linguistic preprocessing. I will show you what exactly we do in a second. And then we annotate this text with a couple of features. Also show you that. And then we can automatically, based on these features, classify each activity you have recognized in the text and say, okay, this is manual, this is a user task, and this is automatic. What we're interested in, obviously, are the manual tasks or the user tasks, because only those are subject to automation later on. So, what do we do? So let's take one example. For a sentence, the vacations request process starts when an employee submits a vacation request via the ERP system. If you feed this to standard NLP tool, such as the Stanford parser, you will get back this. Have you ever worked with such tools before? You have? How did you like it?
Well, my huge problem was like automating class and using the
NLP. And it worked well? Not so much?
Yeah, somehow we managed to put it together.
Yeah, somehow we managed to put it together. Yeah, so NLP tools are not perfect, but you see here that they're actually quite accurate. So assuming that you have never seen this before, so these codes just tell you what kind of word type it is. So that's something you have last time done in elementary school when you were asked to mark verbs and nouns. So DT says, okay, that's a determiner. NNS means it's a noun in the plural form. NN means it's just a noun. And basically by just looking at VB, verbs, so VBZ means it's a verb in the third person singular form, which it is, starts. Yeah, so you can easily identify verbs. And what this parser can also do, and that's even more interesting, is analyzing relations. So what you see here is that there is a subject relation between process and starts, that there is a subject relation between employee and submit, and then there is a direct object relation between submit and request. So this is something you can all get automatically. And well, the idea is, okay, if we have this, well, then we can at least very easily identify the tasks itself, right? Sorry. So we can, so something like submit, process starts, or employee submits, vacation request. That's something we can very easily figure out and use. So, we have 50 minutes left, right? All right. Almost there. So we thought, okay, what features can we consider? So if we look at the text as a human, how would we figure whether something is a user task, manual, or automated? That some things relate to the verb, right? So some verbs are clearly referring to something manual. So if you have analyze, for instance, it's a verb that is rather associated with some cognitive task. If you have the verb generate, it's probably something that is rather associated with a automated task. Not in all cases, but more likely, right? If you look at objects, so there are certain objects that are probably more likely to be processed automatically or manually, right? So now we're in a business context, but of course, if you're thinking again about the Amazon warehouse, if we talk about headphones, well, it's more, this is a physical object you carry around, so probably nothing is happening automatically here. Maybe. But these are just some of the features we considered. The resource type is important, right? So if the resource is a computer, well, it's probably automated. If the resource is a human, it's probably user task or manual. And also, the last feature we considered is whether it is somehow connected to the IT domain. So, question, of course, does it work? What we did is we built this system I explained very briefly to you, and we had a couple of text collections, and we implemented a prototype in Java and a support vector machine, and then we built four configurations, right? So this is what you typically do in science to show that things work. You have a very basic configuration, and you add all these other features. So action only, action and plus object, action plus object plus resource, and then everything together. And what you can see is that, so these are, so do you know what precision, F measure and recall are? You should. Your professor is nodding, okay. So in this case, it's a classification problem, right? So if you have a classification problem, then we have basically, when we look at the recall, we want to know, okay, how many of the, if we have, if we have 10 automatic tasks, how many of those have we found, right? And then this would be the recall, and the precision would be from all those we have considered to be automatic, how many of those are correct, right? So maybe we have identified 12, although there are only 10, then we have two false positives. So this is something we here combine this measure, and the F measure is just the harmonized mean of those two, and what you can see, it works pretty well. So it's not the most sophisticated technique we've ever developed, but it was an idea how we can potentially support this. And I have now recently in a recent conference actually seen that people have developed this further to use machine learning to analyze text, to analyze process models, to detect potential automation candidates. So again, this is not perfect, but it gives you a starting point. And if you have 1,000 process models and 500 texts to process, well, then you are thankful for every starting point you can get for sure. Yeah. So just to give you some feeling of what you can do. All right. 5 minutes, 2 minutes to what comes next, and then I heard we have a quiz. So what is currently about? We currently talk about RPA, and I emphasize this many times. We're talking about repetitive, repeatable, and very simple tasks. Of course, there is the desire to move forward and to somehow combine RPA and AI. The idea is, of course, that such intelligent robots might be able to learn, for instance, how to acquire information and how to get these rules, so to learn these rules by themselves, that they might be able to reason. Yeah, so they might get to decisions, also in cases where it's not perfectly clear, right? So actually, that's something that's already happening. Yeah, so maybe the decision, to some extent it's happening, right? So if you make a, if you think of a decision about a loan, this is already made by a system. How is it made by a system? Well, it's basically based on statistics and algorithms, and they basically compute how likely you're to pay back the money. And if you're not likely enough, well, you don't get a loan. So these kind of mechanisms can be incorporated in other contexts as well. And then we would get to reasoning. And well, based on feedback, these algorithms could also correct themselves. Very last thing to tell. So there, I read about this case study with Hollard. It's South Africa's largest insurance company. And they were drowning basically in customer support requests. And they had 1.5 million yearly emails. And they need to classify those to follow SLA and regulatory requirements. And then what they did, because they were totally lost, because they had many people working on this, but still couldn't manage, is to configure a robot that would access the email, interpret the content. Let's say here there's some intelligence in there. So once you have NLP, natural language processing, in place, it gets more vague. But they implemented this anyways. They built they taught this robot to classify it and file the documentation, extract relevant data, update the system, connect this to the relevant human. So again, classification task might go wrong, but would basically say, okay, you're responsible most likely, and then send a confirmation email to the requester upon completion. So this is what they did, and of course this is a big success story they have to tell. So they realize, okay, they can automate 98% of all these cases, can, well, according to 600% faster, and they freed more than 11 FTEs and could cut costs by, well, 91% in this particular area, and also realized that they can do it more accurately. So the quality of information is what they say has improved drastically and is virtually error-free. So especially when humans are overworked in the context of very repetitive processes, you just do a lot of mistakes. And what I think, there's a lot of potential there when you look at NLP and this kind of reasoning, machine learning. So a couple years ago, I attended a talk by one of the creators of IBM Watson. And they try to use IBM Watson also for predicting things like heart attack, so based on the symptoms. It turned out that the machine was better than the human, but people were just less willing to accept that a human would pass away because of a wrong decision of a machine than based on a wrong decision of a human. So maybe that's all something we have to better reflect on, because in many cases, machines can make very, very accurate decisions. I'm not saying it's a solution for everything, but this is, I think, where this field is headed. And well, there are always ethical considerations, of course, but I think it's very interesting what's possible. And I hope I could give you some overview of the field and what RPA is about, automation is about, and where it's about to go. And now you have time for questions. We have time for questions and a quiz.
Yes.
First of all, thank you for your attention. Yeah?
No questions.
Come on.
There's a question.
Might it be a solution for our companies to write all these processes in some kind of formal language? Or is it
To make it easier to automate things?
So they could just click one of three boxes, if this is an automated task, or if it's performed by a human.
So typically, of course, it's not a black and white thing, and then in many cases it's also a problem of the granularity, right? So if you have a task, send order. Yeah, and it typically describes a lot of small tasks as well. So it's typically not a yes or no, right? So it's almost as a question: are you a good person, right? So say yes or no. And it's a bit hard, and typically, yeah. And I think BPNN models are quite formal already to some extent, but I think it's very hard to it will be hard to fully automate this, because the effort of getting to this, even if it was possible to get to this level of formalization, will probably not offset the costs. Yeah.